Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's episode of the American College Experience, ACE for short. My name is Jason Haynes. I'm the host of today's program and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network. And we are so excited that you have caught this broadcast or caught any of our other podcasts, for that matter. We like to consider ourselves one of the best-kept secrets in the tennis world. A lot of people have started to find out about us, and you are one of them, or two of them, or three of them. We have been operating inside this media world, this mass media world. Now this is our fourth year. We have over 1,300 hours worth of tennis interviews through the course of our time. At times we've had as many as six tennis shows a week. We are down to four tennis shows that we produce on a monthly basis. We had just last night, and that would have been Monday evening, confirmed another new show coming on the air, and that will be hosted by John Denise. John is the executive director of the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association, and we are so excited to have them on board to talk about what is happening in high school tennis all across the United States of America, particularly Florida. Considering what is happening down in Florida with the USTA, we are so excited to have a man with the stature of John participate in our network. The other shows that we have on air that you can catch up with, and let me remind you that if you want to find our shows, just go to iTunes under the podcast section and look for the UR Tennis Network. That is the then the letters U, R, the number 10, the letter S, network. And you can find, like I said, over 1,300 hours of tennis broadcasting. And we try to bring you the tennis interviews that the other networks just cannot bring you due to lack of time constraints or other things. Monday, we have a show that is called Parenting Aces with Lisa Stone. Lisa runs a blog out of Atlanta, Georgia, called ParentingAces.com, and Lisa keeps us connected with the junior tennis world. She is currently at the U.S. Open. If you have been up there, you have bound to have seen her. She's been wearing ParentingAces.com T-shirts all these last 2 weeks and doing a phenomenal job of posting online through Facebook wonderful pictures of what she's been doing up there. She comes on Monday, 11 o'clock Central Standard Time. And then Wednesday, before I come on the air, is the great Chuck Creasy. Chuck is one of America's finest treasures, a true gentleman in this sport, but he has got some fire in his belly, and he brings it to the radio every week, and he is a guy that can discuss the issues and leave the personal part of this at home, and he is in the thick of things. I'm so glad to have him a part of our network. And then recently we added B.J. Paul and David McIsaac out of the Junior Tennis Champions Center. Did I say that right? You know, I'm sorry. And that's out of Maryland. Chuck used to work up there, but these guys are going to bring youth for this network, and we're excited that they're on board, and then we're adding John's show. So if you have an interest in tennis, if you want to talk tennis for an hour a week, if you have some passion about a particular area of tennis, then you can get in touch with me. You can email me, jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. And we'll talk about your passion. And we here at the network, we believe in the team tennis approach. We are a group of individuals that do love our sport, but believe me, we love to operate in this great mass media world as a team. We are not on some island, people. We are in the boat, and we are paddling, and we are getting faster, and we are getting more efficient at what we do. And that is evident by the listeners as we keep growing every week. We have had two phenomenal months in a row here. I don't know how we do it, but our listenership keeps picking up. We ask that you please keep telling your friends about us. We don't advertise hardly at all. We rely on you, word of mouth, the best way to advertise. And just keep telling other people about us. And then the rest will take care of itself. The good Lord's watching out after us, and we know that He'll take good care of us. We've got a lot of things happening in the college tennis world. If you have been under a rock for, say, the last 2 weeks, you just don't know that college tennis season has begun. Many college tennis coaches are out there. Small college coaches are out there practicing. I was over at Tyler Junior College yesterday, watching a little bit of their practice as they look to regroup from two national runner-up finishes last year. Disappointing years, if you can say that, as a national runner-up. But when you get used to winning national championships, and they are rebuilding, it's good to see the kids back on the court. 96-degree weather. These kids are out there battling the elements, battling each other, and hitting a lot of balls. A lot of the D1 coaches have got their kids in their conditioning. They haven't quite hit the courts yet due to time constraints, which I can't quite understand. If we're trying to get these kids ready for the pro tour and pro tennis is on TV, why aren't we duplicating that model? Now, football is in season. They are out there busting their tail ends, getting their kids ready for the pro environment. Basketball, pro environment. Tennis, not quite the case. And we saw that recently with the change in the scoring system. Football did not change their scoring system. They did not reduce a touchdown to 5 points. Basketball did not extend the three-point line or add a four-point shot. But tennis, for some reason, decided over the summer that we need to go to no-add scoring, and this was the key component in producing more pro players. So let's see it, NCAA. Let's see it, ITA. Let's see it, USTA. Let's see it at the end of this year. I expect 10, maybe 20 players to come out and proceed at this year's time, at next year's time, U.S. Open. We should have 10 to 20 collegiate players playing U.S. Open due to the current scoring change. Hallelujah that we finally made the change. Now, here's what you have to compete against from this year's U.S. Open. Just so you understand, okay, as far as men's singles go, not one American men, whether they went to college or not, made it past the third round. John Isner, Kevin Anderson, third round losses. Both defeated players. Isner lost to Cole Schreiber, did not lose his serve. So what we're finding out about Isner is, despite being 6'9", despite having a wingspan of 10'8", despite being able to hit a serve 140 miles an hour, you cannot win pro tennis with just a serve. Kevin Anderson, same boat here, people. You have to have a majority of the shots. You got to have a forehand, you got to have a backhand, you got to have a second serve, people. Good news for college tennis, if you're keeping up with it, is doubles. And remember, the great leader of the commentating, John McEnroe, says get rid of doubles. We don't need doubles on the pro tour. But for college tennis people, we better keep doubles if we want exposure out there on the pro tour, because in mixed doubles, Abigail Spears, UCLA, she's into the semifinals with her partner Santiago Gonzalez of Mexico. Abigail played at UCLA, and they're going up against USTA's player development, some of its finest cases in Taylor Townsend and Donald Young. So we're going to see who can develop players. Is it the NCAA, USTA, ITA, or is it USTA PD? On the men's doubles, we know that they're out there, the grandfathers, the big dogs. They've been out there a long time. We hope they hold on for 2016 for the Olympics. Bob and Mike Bryan, they're taking on Scott Lipsky and Rajiv Ram. Rajiv from Illinois, Scott from Stanford, playing in the semifinals of the men's doubles. The Bryan brothers looking for their 100th career title. Amazing longevity in that sport. Now, today's guest, we've got an interesting story with today's guest. Today's guest, and we, as you know, in the course of the summer, we pursue these collegiate coaches that have won national titles, these people that have been out there busting their tail end that managed to get their teams from point A to actually point B, being the national championship, and this guy was a hard guy to catch. Chris Garner. Chris was the NCAA Division III men's national champion at Amherst, and we had him scheduled, and then poof, something happened. Chris advanced himself. Chris advanced to the in the hierarchy of this thing. He went on to the NCAA Division I level. He took the job at the Naval Academy. We didn't know what to do. So he and I got together, and we're going to talk a lot of collegiate tennis today. We're going to travel down the NCAA Division III road, and we're going to get into the Division I mode, and we're going to circle, we're going to spiral, and we're going to connect all this, and we're going to have a fun time with this. So I'm going to bring in Coach Garner today and see what kind of story we can weave. Oh, Coach Garner, are you there?
I'm here, Jason. How are you?
Fine, Chris. I want to welcome you to today's show, and congratulations to you on an outstanding summer. Got to have one of the most interesting tales of all collegiate coaches in the United States of America for a summer of 2014. But, Chris, before we get started, I hate to tell you this. There are going to be people that listen to my show that have no idea who you are. So if you would, just
I'm sure.
a little bit of biographical information here and let us know kind of the Chris Garner tennis story.
Sure. Well, actually, like you said, I'm at the Naval Academy right now. I'm the men's tennis coach. And before that, I grew up playing tennis all my life. I was a U.S. junior. I was number one in the 14s, number one in the 16s, number three in the 18s in the U.S., and I went to the University of Georgia for 1 year where I was an All-American, and I got to play for Coach McGill and Manuel Diaz was the assistant coach, so that was an incredible experience for me there with a team that I was a part of. And from there, I had an opportunity to play on the pro tour. Nick Bollettieri, where I attended high school, had a traveling team where he helped pay for the expenses of the guys that were on his team, and so I got a chance to go on the pro tour and work my way up. I got to 120 in the world and got to travel all around, see a lot of different places and meet a lot of different people, and it was definitely just an incredible life experience for me. And once I got done with that, I was in private coaching, and then I got into running a club, and I always wanted to get into college coaching, but I did not have my degree, and I was married, and we had two young boys, and my wife was very supportive as far as to go back to college to take classes, and so I went to the University of Colorado for one season to work for Sam Winterbotham, who's the head coach at the University of Tennessee now, and take classes, and We left the Cayman Islands. I was running a club down in the Cayman Islands, and it was an incredible experience for everybody down there. And went back to school. I took a job that was, I think they were paying $14,000 for the year for to help assist the men's tennis team, and took classes on the side. And from there, I went over to the Ohio State University to help Ty Tucker, who I grew up with in the juniors. And I took classes there until I completed my degree from Ohio State. And from there, once I got my degree, I looked at some job opportunities, and Amherst College was a great fit for me and my family. It's a beautiful area in western Massachusetts, and the very family-oriented college, and the type of individuals that we had on the team was very rewarding to work with. And so we were there for about 7 years. And from there, the Naval Academy, actually, I didn't even know the job was open. My grandfather served in the Navy in World War II, and he was a very patriotic man. And on his one-year anniversary of his death, I got a phone call from the Naval Academy saying that their position was open and asking me if I would be interested in speaking with them about it. And sure enough, I spoke to them about it. And once my family, especially my grandfather's side, found out about it, you know, this is a sign. And so I wound up coming here. And, you know, I have just a fantastic day to be among these individuals that are committing their life to the future generation we have in this country. I tell them at practice, you know, it's different being at the Naval Academy compared to Amherst or Ohio State or Colorado, in the sense that you are the students are not only representing the school and themselves, but I mean they're representing the United States of America. And so to have a chance to have an impact on these young men's life and help shape them as far as the type of competitors and the type of men and respect and whatnot and team camaraderie, to have a part in that is so rewarding for me to be involved with, and that's where we're at.
Well, Chris, like I said, I mean, this is of all the coaches that I had talk about national championships this summer, I mean, your story is so interesting because of the transitions that you have made in the course of not just this summer, but in the course of your coaching career. You're somewhat, you know, there are a lot of people that look at ways to get involved in the college coaching ranks. How do you climb the ladder, so to speak, and the sacrifices that you have to make to get to certain levels? And young man, you have made tremendous sacrifices to get to where you are, and it's a tremendous pat on the back that one of the top educational institutions has recognized you. And we're going to talk in depth about the Naval Academy, because myself, I have no knowledge about the Naval Academy, and we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. But before we do, we got to talk about this, you know, what happened before Navy came calling. And you know, let's go back to the fall of 2013. I mean, when you started there at Amherst, you bring your guys together. Are you thinking this is going to be an interesting year? What kind of year were you looking at there at Amherst?
Well, you know, the guys have had a lot of success at Amherst, but the number one thing that I've always tried to focus on for their experience to be at Amherst is just the time that they have together and kind of putting forth a lot of effort and trying to have a great experience with one another. If they put a piece of themselves into the program, they're going to get a lot out of it in return. And, you know, you can look at the wins and losses, and those have a way of taking care of themselves. I remember I was working with a girl tennis player, U.S. junior, name was Tracy St. John. She was an up-and-coming U.S. junior a long time ago, and she was working with Jose Aguirre. And one of the things that he said that always stuck with me, he said, you know, someone, you're going to win or lose. If you spend your time just focusing in on winning and losing, you're missing what you should be focusing in on when you're playing, when you're training. And that's kind of maybe my philosophy as a coach that I've tried to focus in and have the guys have a rewarding experience. And from there, you know, good things will happen. I mean, at Amherst attracts a lot of good players, especially for the Division III level. And when you get good players together and you get them to enjoy the time that they have with one another and you get them to learn how to compete with one another and for one another, you know, they're going to be a very competitive team, and they're going to believe in themselves. And you know, whether they win or lose, it's going to be a memory that they'll cherish for a long time. So, you know, in the fall, that's all, you know, we're trying to create is that sort of atmosphere where the guys really want to be a part of the team. We've always had a big team at Amherst, and so it was a very kind of welcoming and just we're all in it together, and they develop these lifelong friendships that you want to see happen. I know that when I played at Georgia, that was one thing I always remembered, that I just really enjoyed the guys on the team, and I've always tried to look at a college tennis team as a way that it's not just the 4 years that they're there, but in an extension, it could be the rest of their lives that they develop these relationships. So that's what I tried to do at Amherst, and I think that one of the reasons they were so successful is that the school is just a strong academic school, and there's a lot of smart tennis players out there that happen to be really good tennis players too. And so we were able to attract them, and we were able to keep them motivated. And at the Division III level, there's become more and more amount of teams that are very competitive, and they have young coaches that are really into it. And I shouldn't say young coaches, but just coaches that really care about the team and the guys on the team. And so you can see that come out in the matches, and so that was a lot of fun to be a part of.
Chris, when you say team there at Amherst, I mean, when you take a look at your roster, Chris, you could have filled out do maybe three other college teams here. I mean, how many guys do you normally carry on that team?
Well, we probably on average were a little bit above 20. And what happened at Amherst is that there were a number of guys who got into the school who were good enough to be on the team, who were not necessarily recruited players. And so I had to take that into account. And I would say the majority of the tennis players that come to Amherst don't necessarily choose Amherst because of tennis. It's probably academics first. And then obviously the tennis program helps in their decision-making, especially if they're passionate about tennis and they want to be a part of a strong camaraderie and peer group during college. But the amount of guys that we had, we always tried to create competitive opportunities for them to play. When we would go on spring break, we'd go to California, and we would have an assistant coach and another friend of mine, Bob Bateman, would come out, and we would get triple headers for the team to play, and all three of the coaches would go out in different vans, and we'd play about, could be up to 18 matches on spring break. And so they would all really, it would be like a fantasy camp for tennis that week. You would see these guys who wouldn't see the sun much for a couple of months in the beginning of the year, and then we would get out in California where it was so sunny and the weather was perfect, and the guys would just be loving being outside and sharing the laughs together and going to In-N-Out Burger and just having a great team experience, and then getting a chance to represent Amherst and getting a chance to play quality competition in California. So that was the way that we were able to keep the team the size it was. And some of the most rewarding notes or thanks that I've received a lot of times comes from guys that weren't necessarily going to be on the team if we just had the team at 10 or 12. Some of those guys that started at 24 and then worked their way up to 16, or you know, started at 20 and worked their way up to 10, just to see that development and to see that enjoyment and passion that they had, you know, not only helped them, but it helped everyone around them. And so it was just, it kind of snowballed. I never thought that we would have that many guys in the team, but it just somehow it worked, and the guys really enjoyed the size of the team and enjoyed that peer group that they were a part of.
As far as academics go, what are some of the strengths in Amherst? Their as far as and when you draw a student in academically, the programs, the degrees that are offered there, what are some of the strengths that Amherst has?
Well, so my 7 years there, what I saw, and a number of the guys wanted to go into the finance world, and because of the location and because of the alumni network and because of the stature of the degree, they would kind of, their route would be, they would come in their first 2 years, they would kind of do what they wanted in the summer, but by their junior year, they would look for an internship in New York City or in Boston or out in L.A. or Chicago even, and then in hopes of translating that into a job opportunity immediately upon graduation. And they were very successful in that. We had a really strong group that's moved on and are doing really well out there. And also medicine, what was quite popular in the beginning, but thereafter it died down a little bit under economics. But when I first got there, they don't have a pre-med degree, but it was pre-med field of study, so you could take neuroscience, chemistry, biology, whatever it may be, and then they would catapult that into medical school. And then you have some of the guys who take, you know, humanities, it might be English or history or poli-sci degree, and then they kind of try and figure out the direction that they want to go in life. But Amherst it's a liberal arts school, so it's very open, and it's kind of a broad range of interests that it seems like it attracts a student that is interested in more than just one thing going to school, because you have the athletic component, you have the academic component. It seems like they really enjoy being at the school. You can see that through their alumni group, how many people come back from homecoming, how many people keep in touch, and the way that they talk about their time at Amherst. So it seems like the overall education that they receive really helps them immediately upon graduation. I always tried to stress to them that they're in a great spot there, because there's a lot of students out there in college that are working hard, but being in a place like Amherst, you're going to work hard, and because of the stature of the school, you're going to be ahead a little bit, and you really want to take advantage of that and use it to better yourself and widen your for your future.
Well, Chris, I notice on your fall schedule, it's a short, very short season. Is that the NCAA design? Is that Chris Garner design to maximize spring season? We know, because you are an NCAA D3 program, that you have limitations put upon you, but was that your design or just something else?
That was definitely our design. Because we have such a big team, we have a lot of competition within the team for spots in our lineup, and things have a way of working themselves out, and we'll do a lot of inter-team match play. And so in the fall, we use that for everyone's going to be falling within the team. And then the opportunities that we did have in the fall, I really liked going to Johns Hopkins and Carnegie Mellon. It was a great opportunity to have the guys get a sense of what it's going to be like in the spring, especially those programs are so strong. And we actually used to play Kenyon, and we would take a little road trip when they had fall break. They had a Monday and Tuesday off, and so we'd get in the van and drive down to play Johns Hopkins, and we'd drive over to play Carnegie Mellon, and then we would even drive to Kenyon, but Kenyon couldn't do it anymore after a couple of years, but it was a great way to be with the guys in the van and have them experience that team travel and hear the stories that they share with one another, and also get a chance to see what it's like to play another team, especially for freshmen that come in. And with Division III, they have a big regional tournament like they do with Division I, and whoever wins that, they'll have like a Super Bowl small college tournament down in Mobile where they bring all the winners together, and then they play another tournament down there. And we always try to get one of the Ivies to send a few guys to one of the individual tournament that they have. That is, it's, you know, an opportunity for the guys to gauge where they're at against some, in a way, higher competition than what we would be seeing coming up in the spring. So we all as many opportunities as we can for the spring because we have such a large team and we try and create as many doubleheaders as possible so we can get double, you know, 6, 12, 14, however many guys we can get in a day of matches. And so that was another reason that we tried to save some of the dates.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that here in a little bit because I looked at your schedule and I've got some questions in regards to that. That's an interesting schedule you've got there. Now, I had Coach Amy Bryant on, and Amy's from Emory University, and she said one of the things she loves about the D3 atmosphere is, you know, that the kids can play tennis, but they can also get involved with other things on campus. Is that kind of the same thing, same viewpoint you had as a D3 coach is that, you know, I'm getting these good tennis players, these good athletes, but the sole purpose is just not tennis. There are other things on campus that these kids are getting involved with.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. But being at Colorado, I specifically remember, I mean, it was somebody, his name was Marco Bundelo. He was studying to be an engineer. And in engineering is probably one of the toughest degrees out there. And he couldn't practice as much as anyone else. And I know it's, you know, just his academics that he wasn't involved in other things. But I think even at the D1 level, you can still find that time if you find the right coach and the right program. But definitely in the Division III, I think it's much more accepted and it's much more motivating to be involved in other areas besides just the tennis team. I know we had some guys involved in music on our team that were very active, and so it was a balancing between all three things that they were interested in while they were at Amherst. But I think that's possible for any place if you're open with the coach and you want to be involved in other things. I think at the D1 level and even at D3, I see some of the guys that come in and they've only known tennis and academics, so it's tough for them to branch out. But some of the guys that have a more varied experience, whether it be piano, whether it be guitar or singing or some other avenue of academics besides just their point of interest, those guys are able to take advantage of the D3 model and experience everything. And I think that's, you know, during college, during those 4 years, you definitely want to try and branch out and get out of your comfort zone because eventually you're going to have to make a living and you're going to have to be in your comfort zone to a certain extent.
Well, Chris, now when you enter the spring 2014 season with this Amherst squad, it looks like you start in February, but my question for you, and I look over this schedule, and it looks like at some point that you actually played a quad a day. Is that right? You had 4 matches in one day?
Yes, that was an accident. We were trying to schedule teams, and in California, we always try and schedule the heavy hitters of the Division III, CMS, Redlands, Cal Lu. We're out there, Pomona, Pitzer, and so thought that we were going to be playing CMS on our final day because that's kind of what we always do because they're probably the premier program in Division III, and we always get a chance to play them on the day we're leaving back home, and so it's always a lot of fun to kind of bookmark the spring break. But this year they couldn't because they had a conference match scheduled for that day, so we had to move that match around, and yeah, we actually wound up with a quadruple header, and I was really lucky that the Caltech coach Mandy Gamble, she waited for us because we were stuck in traffic rushing to get to that campus. There was a truck overturned on the highway, and we were stuck on the highway for an hour and a half. So we're lucky that she didn't default us. It kept us in the game.
Hey, Coach, that's truly maximizing a day. 4 matches in one day.
Yep, we did.
Now, Coach, you know, we're going to try to travel through this Amherst thing real quickly here. As you go through this spring schedule, and I got a question about that CMS program that I'm going to get to, but as you go through this spring schedule, when you set it up, were there certain checkpoints in that schedule in which your team you're looking at to see how they're advancing as you go along through this?
I wouldn't team-wise, I would say I'm actually probably looking individual-wise, who's putting themselves in a position to be in our lineup, and who's in our lineup, and then who's maybe on the cusp of the lineup and seems like they're gaining momentum. So I don't know if I would look at it as far as how the team is doing against other teams. I probably would look at it individually. What do these guys need to be peaking at the right time of the year? And a guy that's gaining momentum and motivation and he's really embracing the challenge, what do I need to do to nurture that and give him a chance? And at the same time, someone that might be kind of faltering in the lineup that seems like they're fading, what's going on in their life that might be having something to do with that? Maybe it's something that's outside of tennis that is affecting their performance. So I'm probably looking more at that than the win losses.
It sounds like as your season progresses that your lineup is constantly changing, that you're looking for performers to step up and pecking order to be established as you move in towards late March, early April, into May?
Correct. I mean, at the end of the day, at our level, guys are very close. I mean, there's not much separating the number one guy from our team compared to a number one guy from another team in the top 10 area. And so which guys are going to be the ones that are going to fight for one another? Which guys are going to be the ones that hang in when it's a little bit more windy than what they like, or they get a bad line call? Or, you know, those are the type of guys that you want to have. And if you don't have them, what do we need to do to get them? Because those are the type of guys that are going to win the close matches, or at least give the team a chance to win. Maybe they don't win, but you know that they're not going to lose. The other team is going to wind up winning, and they're going to leave everything they have out on the court. And so that's hopefully we have three doubles teams that have that kind of edge to them at the end of the year, and you know where they're in the mood to mix it up.
Coach, does Amherst play in a conference? Do you have to qualify for a season-ending conference championship? How do you qualify for nationals at that D3 level?
Well, at our conference, you have one automatic qualifier, and we're in the NESCAC conference, and that's Williams, Middlebury, Bowdoin, Bates, Hamilton, Trinity, Tufts, Wesleyan, and Colby. And you have one qualifier that gets in, and usually we could ultimately have four teams, and I think there's five at-large bids, maybe six at-large bids. And so if you don't win the conference, if you're in the top three, you're usually still good to make the NCAAs, but it's always good to win the conference, and you're assured a spot. And usually the teams that finish 1 and 2 are in our conference are usually somewhere in the top four in the nation, and so you're putting yourself in a good position moving forward.
Chris, when you head into nationals, you've got an incredible record heading into nationals. On the course of the year, you've had a tremendous number of wins, but you've had a couple of losses. And going into nationals, you're obviously feeling good that your team's on a winning march here. But when you reflect upon those losses, were they necessary losses? Were they good losses for your teams to encounter? Did they happen at the right time for your team?
That's always, I guess you can say that. I mean, it definitely seems like you will learn more from a loss than you do from a win at times. And I definitely think that in both cases, I learned a lot. I think the team learned a lot from the losses that we took in the season, and I think that it helped us moving forward as far as what we needed to improve on in doubles and what we needed to improve on in courts 1 through 6 as far as the support of one another. We had a freshman who was just a dynamite player, Anton Zykov, and he tends to get a bit excitable when he's playing, a little grumpy sometimes, but I think when he started to realize how much influence he had on the guy next to him, when he kept his wits about him and he just competed well, he really helped the team improve as the season went along, especially at the end. And we had just a real strong senior crew with Joey Fritz, Chris Dale, and Justin Rindell that were in the lineup, and I think they wanted to win, and they worked hard to win. In the off season, we don't do anything, but I would see them out there getting the team out there and exercising and showing it the rest of the team that it meant a lot to them. And I think when you have the leaders of your team recognize that this is important to me, this is a valuable experience to me, it runs right through the rest of the team. And so we were fortunate to have that. And vice versa, if you have the senior members of your team that they don't really have the passion or they've moved on from it, that will trickle down too. We were fortunate this year to have those three guys that were that you could tell that was so important to them, and it just translated to everyone else.
Well, Chris, now when you get out there to Nationals in California, how many matches does your team have to play to get to the championship match?
When we get to California, they start in the quarterfinals. So in the quarterfinals, we played Emory. We actually played Emory, and it was a close match, and we were able to get through. And then we played Trinity in a terrific match. They actually were in a really good position to move on, and somehow the guys just gained momentum and fought back, and it really was just a momentum shift, that a wave that the guys just rode. You could just feel it as the match progressed, that holy cow, these guys, these Amherst guys, I mean, you might not be able to stop them. I mean, they were down in a lot of matches, and they just kind of fought back, and so it put them in a position to play in the finals.
Now, it is that adversity that each championship team faces, you know, in the quarterfinal, the semifinal, that gives them that attitude heading into the national championship round. You get out there, and you know, you face a team, Claremont Mud Scripps. Now, Chris, I got to ask a question here, and I'm glad that I've got you. And I've joked about this for years. I was a small college coach myself. I did the women, but this is something that always bugged me. You've got Claremont Mud Scripps. It's the three schools, Division III program. I mean, shouldn't they be winning every year? I mean, it's like an all-star team, right? I mean, you can pick and choose from each program. Aren't you guys at a disadvantage there?
I wouldn't say that. So I would actually, if they could put all their players in Harvey Mudd, which is one of the toughest and most demanding engineering schools in the country, I wouldn't mind that, because then they probably wouldn't even be ranked in the top 10 because they'd be spending so much time in their academics. But no, I mean, they do attract a lot of good players. I mean, they have the best facility in the country, bar none. They have an incredible coach. He's just a quality person, a character person. Paul Settles, one of the nicest guys you could meet. And, you know, at the end of the season, I mean, anything can happen. Like I said, even though they do have so many players and they're super players for our level, you know, they're not so much better than the rest of us that we're not going to have a chance. And I think that, you know, each year they're right there, and it'll happen for them. I won't be surprised if it doesn't happen here within the next couple of years. I mean, it's just a great program, and they've had some bad bounces go against them that I've seen since I've been at Amherst. But you know, they do everything right. I mean, the guy's just a great guy, and their guys fight hard, and they're respectful on the court, and they're gracious when they win, they're gracious when they lose. And you know, there isn't outside of Amherst, you know, there isn't another team in the country that I wouldn't want to see be successful. And it's just a class program, and I'm sure that it'll happen. But you know, one of the things that they have going against them is that they're at one of the nicest places in the country. You know, who knows? Maybe it's tough to keep really hungry there. We're at Amherst where it's windy and cold, and, you know, we're playing in winter coats sometimes outside, and it's easy to get a little bit of an edge to you that you might not get out there in sunny L.A. area.
Yeah. Well, Chris, on that final day, NCAA D3, men, you play a 9-point dual match, eight-game pro set for the doubles. You start the day. Are you excited about the doubles? Kind of take us through the doubles points as you go through it.
The doubles, I mean, CMS has always had really strong doubles, and we knew that we would have opportunities in all of them, but the momentum and the aggression that CMS brought at all three actually was they came hard, they came fast, and they really got up on us at one and two, and then at three we had a guy named Michael Salmano who actually did not lose a match the entire year in singles in dual match play. He was just a terrific player, and he's going to be a terrific leader for that team. And he and Chris Dale, who were a senior, got us on the board, and they're both kind of, they can play well around the net, and they're aggressive players, and they were able to squeak a point out there for us. And I think that's obviously what gave us life going into singles, because it was, out of the years that I've been at CMS, it was just a great atmosphere. They had a lot of fan support out there, and we had a number of the guys who were on our team but weren't in the lineup that were there and so supportive, and so it was just a lot of fun for everybody involved in both teams. I think you could really see that as much as they were enjoying being in the finals, I think they even enjoyed it that much more, that there was so much interest and passion and loudness in the audience.
Now, and unfortunately, if I read this right, you're out of the doubles, you're behind to CMS on that day. You get the break, the 10-minute break. Coach, what do you say to your kids about the national championship? What have they got to do to get back in front?
Well, I don't know if there's anything they need to do. They just need to go out and be themselves and compete hard, and that they're going to have their opportunities. You know, it's great where we're on the board. We could have been down 3-0 or at 2-1. Everybody that's going out to play the singles match has an opportunity. It's up to you to get out there, take advantage of what you have, what you do well, and utilize that against your opponent, and make sure you're supporting the guy next to you and trying to lift him up. And if you guys do that, you know, you're going to be a team to be reckoned with. So that's kind of what we look at in between.
Yeah, and it resonated. I mean, you went out there and you took four of the five completed singles matches. One of the matches did not finish. It was headed to be an intense match. I got to ask, when it gets said and done, and that last ball drops, and everybody's celebrating, does Coach Chris Garner, does he get the Gatorade bath? Is he watered down? What happens?
Maybe just the water bottle. But my most rewarding is just seeing the guys, how happy they are to be at that point. And just, I mean, I've been there and I've seen it when they lose also, and what it means to them and how much it hurts when they have lost. And just to see them in that exuberance and that those emotions that they share with one another, and just kind of what they've gone through to get to that point, that's what's really cherishing for me, to see that on their faces and to see them so happy.
Yeah, and, you know, and then you win the national championship at the Division III level. And then within a few weeks, a couple of months later, you get this tremendous call from the Naval Academy. Now, let's talk about the Naval Academy here a little bit to finish out the day. Naval Academy, tell me about how many people go to the Naval Academy?
I think it's probably around 4,500, if I wanted to say, if I had to guess.
And where are you located?
Annapolis, Maryland.
And
right on the water.
This is the, yeah, yeah. I hope so. It would be a weird situation otherwise. You guys, and I say that respectively, you know, this is one of the top academic institutions, thank the good Lord for that, in the United States. Years ago, when I was a community college, junior college a recruiter, used to run into some of you armed forces recruiters. You could recruit early in the years with the kids, and I understand that now that's a little bit different. But Chris, my guess is that you are in touch with some of the top academic, top athletic juniors in the nation pretty early in their careers. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, I think that just being here the couple months that I've been here, in a way it's similar to Amherst. As far as at Amherst, you would find students who knew what they wanted early on. Like, this is the type of experience I want academically. You know, please keep an eye on me. I'm working towards this goal. And I would say the same thing applies to the Naval Academy, is that you're going to find a certain person who wants this opportunity, who they may have a patriotic part of them, or maybe they want to be debt free, or they want to have a job upon graduation, or they know what that degree means to their future, whatever it may be. And so I think that obviously the Naval Academy and the name just recruits itself. I mean, it's you're going to find players who want to come here, and it's just trying to find the type of player that will make the team more competitive also, not just any player. I mean, obviously we got to have a certain standard and a certain level that we're working to try and come up to, and so we actively want to be getting the word out there and the opportunities and the support staff that they have here academically. That was one thing that I was taken aback by, about how unbelievable the support that you get here academically, and that's for everybody. It has nothing to do whether you're an athlete or what your background is at the school. Everyone gets this academic support. And as long as you're willing to work hard and ask and communicate and say you need help, these professors, they stay late at night. Their desks are made so the students can stay right in their office and work on whatever they need to. I mean, it's amazing the resources and what they do to allow each midshipman to be successful here. The only way to not be successful at this place is you don't want to be. If you're motivated and you have the work ethic and you can communicate with your professor, you're going to be dynamite here. And obviously, you know, some levels are ahead as far as academically, but even those people who might not be as far ahead academically, they come in here, they have the right attitude. I mean, they're going places. I mean, this degree speaks volumes for when you graduate. I mean, imagine the businesses out there in the world that want somebody who's come from the Naval Academy. You're going to have a great work ethic. You're going to have leadership skills. You're going to be able to take a command. I mean, it just, the list goes on as far as what you can offer a company out there if you decide to go back in the civilian workforce. And if you decide to stay the military route, I mean, that's also a popular avenue to choose. I mean, they just came out with this new major here. It's called cyber operations, and they're building some, I think it's like a $6 million computer lab, and it goes to security. And, you know, I laugh with the guys on the team. I said, you know, any of you guys want to take this degree, I guarantee Target's going to call you. You can apply to Target, and they'll be looking to hire you. I mean, it's the opportunities that these guys have coming out of here are as good as anywhere in the country.
Yeah, it's a great way to put that, Chris. Chris, when I look at this roster on this Naval Academy team, you didn't lose a lot of bodies compared to Amherst. This is another big team.
Yes, I guess they finished last year. They were a little thin at the end of the year. I think they had 6-7 guys, and they had a great recruiting class that they had brought in, Coach Officer and Coach Moreland. And so we've added 5 players, and so that we definitely have some depth and some competition for playing time this year. And we have great leadership up at the top, and we have a couple seniors that I know want to have a really successful season. And so we have a lot of positive energy flowing right now, and, and you know, expectations of one another and what it means. Like I said in the beginning, I mean, the biggest difference I feel here, I feel in a way more responsibility here than I ever have, because these guys are, they're making a commitment to the rest of the country, and not only for their future, but for our future. And so it's imperative that I make sure that they have a great tennis experience, that it's a rewarding tennis experience, that I challenge them with a tough schedule and allow them to be as good as they can be, because so many of these guys that go to college, tennis has been such a big part of their lives, and it doesn't, I mean, you could be at USC. It could be the last 4 years of your life, and so playing tennis. And so you want to make sure that, you know, you do everything as you can as a coach to make sure that they're challenged and it's an enriching time in their life. And so that's what we want to try and establish here at the Naval Academy, is just to create that culture where these guys really want to be a part of the team. They look forward to coming out to practice. I mean, they just have pride being on the team and wanting to compete for one another and do the best they can. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. You can't win them all, but, you know, you can live it. You can come out and live it on a daily basis, and that's what we need to do.
Yes, I have to ask on a personal level, I mean, is this a situation where you as a coach, I mean, granted, you're representing a school, per se, as a college coach, but, I mean, internally, I mean, you're representing the United States, right? I mean, is that kind of the way you go through this?
I mean, yeah, I think that, I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm representing the NAAA, the athletic department, but, yeah, I look at it like it's, in a way, a higher calling, that I need to hold these guys more accountable, in my opinion, than I would at somewhere else. I mean, at any school that you're at, you're looking to try and help the young men mature and learn a lot of life lessons out of tennis and out of being on a team, and so much of that is going to help them as they move forward in life. But at the same time, here at the Naval Academy, I mean, these guys are supposed to represent the best of the best, and so maybe what I would have let slide to a certain extent in allowance of letting someone grow and learn from something, I probably will be quicker to say, look, we don't have time to do something like that here. We don't have time to waste with you speaking that way or what have you. You know, our expectations are higher of you. Just look at the literature as far as what it means to be a midshipman here. You have to live up to that standard, and I have to live up to it also. I mean, I got to raise my game to make sure that I'm ready to take on that challenge and that commitment to help these guys grow and get everything they can out of the Naval Academy for their future and for our future.
And Chris, one of the things that stands out right away is you got a fall schedule here, big man. You start this weekend with your own invitational. And this is about what, 100% more than what you had last fall?
Yes, it's a lot busier here than it was at Amherst, and we added one. I wasn't able to do a lot with the schedule, but I did add a tournament at Georgia, at the University of Georgia, because I felt that, you know, not every year this team makes the NCAAs, and not every year they're going to play at a premier location, but to get a chance to go play an individual tournament at the University of Georgia, you know, it's like, I tell them, it's like going to play at Yankee Stadium. I mean, you're going to play at the mecca of college tennis, and so that's one thing that I'm really looking forward to, especially for the older guys, getting them a chance to go someplace where they can, you know, appreciate the history of how far college tennis has come, especially what Coach McGill was able to build that place up, and obviously with Coach Diaz's help. And so we're looking forward to that. And our individual tournament, we're actually going to rename that next year in honor of Joe Hunt, who was just recognized at the U.S. Open on Monday. He was a guy who won the U.S. Open, won the U.S. Open Juniors. He did something that no one has ever done before, and he went to the Naval Academy, and he passed in a training down in Florida in flight school. But we have a lot of exciting things that we're going to do with our individual schedule moving forward in the fall, and we're really looking forward to it.
And then in the spring, you join the Patriot League. You want to tell us who all's in the Patriot League, Coach?
Well, obviously the number one competitor and rival is Army, and so that's always something that I'm looking forward to experiencing and helping the guys be a part of. And you have Lehigh, Boston University, Bucknell, Holy Cross, Colgate, Loyola of Maryland, and I might be leaving the team out or so, but it's the kind of the extent of them. So.
And Chris, you play a lot of matches at home. What kind of facility do you have there at Annapolis?
We have a great facility. We actually have 24 courts. We have 12 courts on campus. We have 6 varsity courts and 6 other practice courts. And we have off campus, we have 6 outdoor courts that the women use for their varsity play, and a 6-court indoor complex also that's attached to a hockey rink and a golf course. It's called the Brigade Sports Complex. So they have an incredible facility here, and we're really lucky to have access to all the resources that they provide the midshipmen here.
Yeah, you've got practice going. You've got a great assistant coach there. I noticed 14 years this guy's been at Navy.
Coach Moreland, he's an encyclopedia of the Navy. He could probably write a book. He could probably write a book and sell at the gift shop and sell out each year, because anything you have a question on within the last 50 years, he knows it. He's like one of these computers, but he's a human. And anything, though, on the Navy, he knows. And he's been just a valuable resource to me, and I know the guys on the team greatly respect him and appreciate all his efforts that he provides them, and the Naval Academy is lucky to have someone that loves being there and appreciates being a part of the Naval Academy and what they're trying to do for the young men and women of our country.
Well, Chris, I know a lot of small college listeners, the coaches, friends of mine. I also know that we've got the people that enjoy kind of the jumping into the college or have aspirations of jumping into the college ranks. You have had many different experiences here as you travel from Division III to Division I. What are some of the big changes that you've had to undergo yourself moving into this new arena?
Well, I think that just having past experience, I was an assistant coach at Colorado, assistant coach at Ohio State, and I was probably worked under two of the hardest workers in college tennis, and Sam Winterbottom and Ty Tucker. So seeing what they did to be successful and how committed they were, I think I had a good idea. Not that I could be on their level as far as work ethic and passion, but you know, I definitely had a good idea of what it would take to be able to make sure that we're providing a valuable experience to the guys on the team. And so I think that work ethic, it runs a lot deeper here. You don't have as much time as you would at Amherst. There's not as much gaps in between the seasons, and the summers are going to be busier. And so just that commitment, that overall commitment, I need to make sure I'm on top of, just so we're putting the best product out there that we can for the guys that are on the tennis team.
Well, Chris, you get started this Saturday at 9 a.m. in the morning Eastern time. What teams do you have coming into Annapolis to play your team?
We have Temple and St. Bonaventure coming in, and we wind up playing both of those teams during the spring season, so I think it'll be a good introductory to what we're going to be playing against in the spring. And I think it'll be just a lot of fun for especially the freshmen, the first-year guys, to get a chance to put on the uniform and represent the Naval Academy this weekend. And obviously the returners just getting back out and getting to the swing of things and playing against someone other than themselves, I think will be a lot of fun too. And I know a number of them have family coming in this weekend, and that's a big part of these guys on the weekends, getting a chance to be around their family and to have their family watch them and be there to support them. And I know that it'll mean a lot to the guys on the team.
Chris, what's your opinion on the recent scoring changes that the NCAA, USTA, NCAA instituted with the spring dual match changes going to the NOAD scoring? What do you think about that?
I'm not involved in that. It seems like people are trying to make decisions where tennis gets noticed for something. I think it's going to be whatever direction college athletics goes. I don't think switching the scoring system is going to have any influence over what happens to college tennis. If universities or colleges want to pay for basketball and football, they probably won't have a lot of resources left for the other sports. But if they realize or they decide that football is too expensive to pay for, the sports like tennis will, I think, flourish. And because of the possibility of that happening, you know, you might want to try and establish a point system that is in the best interest of the student athlete. And I think that just even being at Division III, where it's about the student athlete, just being around people that make decisions and seeing what they say. You know, a lot of times people have their own agenda, and their own agenda may not be in the best interest of the student athlete. So I think any of these decisions that are made should be made with heavy influence from the student athlete, present and past, what type of experiences they've had. And it doesn't seem like a lot of these decisions are made with them in mind or even with their input. So if I had anything to offer, I would say that we're not listening to the student athletes enough, and we're not doing what's in their best interest enough. And I think that anytime you make a decision, that you need to have their voice heard.
Well, Chris, that's one of the most refreshing news that I've heard on this program in a long time. To hear, and I look at it much the same way you do, my friend. If we could have these people look at this and say, you know what, football is just too doggone expensive. You know, just too. Because I pull for tennis programs in colleges. I know the value long term, having a lifetime sport, the alumni, what they offer to colleges. You know, when you need a new building built, you're going to go get tennis players. You're not going to get football, basketball players. And we understand this. You and I could probably talk about this for days, and I know you got to get out to practice and things like that. But truly, I mean, that's wisdom, my friend. I mean, and I hope that you're right. I hope, and we talk about this a lot on the network. We've got to start listening to the people involved. This is not a fan experience sport. This is a player experience sport. And
right.
you're lucky. If you get to be a fan and watch some of these battles that go on, but you're not entitled to go out, you know, and watch a college tennis match. The people that play are the important participants, not the fan.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I want to wish you the best this weekend with your team. It's been a joy catching up with you, and best to you and your family. You've had a remarkable summer, my friend.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for taking the time to have me on, and best of luck with your show and future success.
Yeah, Chris, I'm gonna reach back out to you in the future and have you back on after you've got a little more hair on your chest, okay?
All right. Look forward to it.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Garner. As I mentioned to you earlier in the program, Chris had a wonderful summer. What better way to go through your summer to lead an NCAA Division III program to a national championship, and then in turn be called up by one of the finest academic institutions in the country, the U.S. Naval Academy, and be recruited to take over their men's tennis coaching position, and then to jump in both feet first and just grab the bull by the horns and take off with it is something that we as college coaches, a lot of us love to do. I think you should keep your eyes on that Naval Academy, on that Patriot Conference, and see if they can overtake the Army and see if they can win a few of those conference titles up there. And want to wish him and his team's many successes in the future years. So, and thank him for coming on today. Now, next week we're going to go a little bit further south. We're going to interview Coach Chad Camper. Chad is the head women's coach over at Louisiana Tech University, over in Ruston, Louisiana. They're the Bulldogs, and we're going to talk some conference USA tennis over there, and look forward to that visit. And just want to thank you for listening in today, and hope that you'll catch some of our other shows. Before I go today, and I want to let you know a little bit something else here, and I caught this recently, and this pertains to those doggone NCAA Division I, those top five programs, you know, the Super Five. Found out recently that Florida State, their men's team, is going to air five dual matches in the spring on ESPN3 and their USTA Clay Court Invitational. And I think it's great. The college tennis is going to get on TV. But when you start putting us on ESPN3, it brings back to me the memories of dodgeball. And I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, but they had the Ocho. ESPN8. And as you go further and further down the line on ESPN, whether it be 3, 4, U, 8, whatever it is, you're not as important. So, yes, it's good that we're on TV, but we're on ESPN3. So don't get real excited about it. When ESPN devotes itself and its time to the greatest sport ever invented, and it puts us in prime time and lets our gladiators do battle in primetime TV. When the SEC and the Pac-12 and the Longhorn networks realize that they're just being used, and that they're demolishing the aspect of the player experience for college tennis in order to get fans and money, when those things are realized, we may just be end up losing the things that made college tennis great. And I thank the good Lord above that there are four other divisions that currently realize that money is not the only thing that drives college tennis. Okay, because Division II, Division III, NAIA, and JUCO, those guys are playing ad tennis. Those guys are playing eight-game pro sets. Those guys are playing two out of three sets, and they don't care about the time. And, yes, they would like to have fans in the seats, but what they care about are those players and the experiences that they get. And they care about those families that come and watch those matches, and they don't stop. They don't stop it when the matches reach four. They play on. And they keep playing. And that's what tennis is about. We don't have a clock. Playing. And that's where we're losing this battle. The elite in this business believe that they know what's best. And sooner or later, they're going to find out that it's the common man that knows what's best for this business. And they're going to be in trouble because they didn't take time to hang out with the common man enough. And they didn't take time to get to know who he was and what he represented because they were too busy up in the clouds. So get out there today and hit some tennis balls and have a great week. Listen to some more UR Tennis Network.